But it was in another Italian city-state, Florence, that the key financial service of providing credit moved out of the ghetto and away from the gates of hell to become the legitimate preserve of banks. This transition was symbolized by the rise of one family, the Medici. With their ascent, credit came of age. Money lending ceased to be disreputable. It became glorious, and the foundation of a new kind of power. The dazzling legacy of the Medici family's power still surrounds you in Florence today. In the space of 400 years, two Medici became queens of France, three became Pope. Appropriately, it was Machiavelli, the supreme theorist of power, who wrote their history. Perhaps no other family left such an imprint on an age as the Medici left on the Renaissance. You might even say that they paid for the Renaissance, their patronage running the gamut of genius from Michelangelo to Galileo.
And this in the Uffizi Gallery is the Medici's private art collection, one of the most spectacular ever assembled.
What the millions of tourists who flock here generally forget to ask is how the Medici paid for all this.
The simple answer is that they were foreign exchange dealers, members of the Arte di Cambio, the money changers' guild, who made it big. They were known as banchieri or tavolieri because, like the Jews of Venice, they literally did their business sitting on benches behind tables. Indeed, the original Medici bank, or bench, was located right here in the Via dell'Arte della Lana, Woolgild Street.
Prior to the 1390s, the Medici were Florence's answer to the Sopranos, a small-time clan notable more for low violence than for high finance. In a 17-year period, no fewer than five Medici were sentenced to death by the criminal courts for capital crimes. Then came Giovanni de' Bicci de' Medici. It was his aim to make the Medici totally legitimate. Part of the secret of his success was an ingenious bit of creative accounting that got the Medici off the hook of the anti-usury laws.
These ledgers of the Medici Bank make it clear how important commercial bills for financing foreign trade were to the bank. True, the church prohibited the collection of interest on loans, but there was nothing to prevent a shrewd trader from making money on transactions like these, which involved multiple currencies.
There was no interest and therefore no sin, simply a commission deducted for the conversion of one currency into another. If money was advanced to a particular trader for any length of time, the commission was that bit larger. In the same way, depositors who put their money in the Medici Bank were given discrezione to compensate them for risking their money. This was credit, in other words, but with the interest payments discreetly concealed. Now, for the first time, money lending had evolved into banking.
The real story of the success of the Medici Bank can be found here in the Libro Segreto, the secret book of Giovanni de' Bicci de' Medici. The key was not so much size as diversification. Earlier Italian banks had been monolithic and very vulnerable to default by a single bad borrower. But the Medici Bank was made up of multiple interlocking partnerships, each in some measure independent of the rest. It was this decentralization that was the key to their astonishing profits.
Under Giovanni's guidance, the Medici banking network extended from Florence to Venice to Rome. The scale and diversity of the Medici's operations was the key to reducing the risks of money lending, and therefore also the costs to borrowers. That's the essential difference between loan sharks and banks, between Shylock and the Medici.
And here's the proof that it worked. Page after page of Giovanni's assets declared for tax purposes, and culminating in the grand total of 91,089 florins. In those days, that was serious money.
When Giovanni died in 1429, his last words were an exhortation to his heirs to maintain his standards of financial acumen. His funeral was attended by 26 men of the name Medici, all paying homage to the man who had made the business of banking respectable and profitable, as it had never been before. For his son Cosimo, the accumulation of wealth combined seamlessly with the accumulation of power. Within 20 years of his father's death, Cosimo de' Medici was the Florentine state. As the Pope himself put it, political questions are settled at his house. The man he chooses holds office. He it is who decides peace and war and controls the laws. He is king in everything but name.
This Botticelli is mainly famous for the beauty of its young subject, but it's actually intended as a tribute to a dead banker, Cosimo de' Medici. That's him there on the medallion, and you can just make out the inscription Pater Patriae, the father of his country.
In 150 years, the Medici had transformed themselves from backstreet moneylenders to the most powerful financial force in Europe. Nothing could better illustrate the extraordinary ascent of money. For what the Medici had achieved was nothing less than the birth of modern banking.
Others had tried before, but the Medici were the first bankers to hit the political big time. And they did it by learning one crucial lesson. In finance, small is seldom beautiful. By making their bank bigger and more diversified, the Medici had found a way of spreading their risks. And by focusing on currency trading rather than just lending, they'd reduced their exposure to defaults by borrowers. For Cosimo and his family, it was a truly beautiful business model.